Chapter 15. Draco sits on his cell bed, elbows on knees, fingers laced together, watching the light flicker under the door as people walk down the corridor beyond it. Everything in him screams that he's trapped, that he's captured, that he's going to be framed, murdered, stripped of his identity. It takes all of Draco's self-control to keep himself seated. Nevertheless, his mind follows the spellwork on his door, finds its soft spots, its weaknesses. What a joke, these wards. An illusion of security for the people on the other side of them. Those people, they, are the real barrier to his freedom. They are what he'll have trouble getting through if he decides to break his way out of here. Draco knows that he can do some real damage if he chooses that course of action, but even he will eventually be overwhelmed by the sheer number of ministry officials out there. He can picture it, himself against a dozen auras. He will hold his own, take down half of them, take down most of them, before one spell too many is hurled his way. And then the corridor will light up a deep emerald green. Draco's body will freeze, spasm, and he'll crumble to the ground, dead, before he even hits it. He imagines that the ministry will be surprised to find, when they cast prior incantato on his wand, that none of the spells he used in the fight were dark. He wonders how they will spin the story, wonders if they will even bother spinning it. Maybe they'll just bury it, and for years afterward, when someone asks, "What happened to Mr. Malfoy?" the answer will be, "No one knows. He just disappeared one day and never came back." There's so much relief in the thought, in the idea of just vanishing from reality. But he knows that he can't do it, much like he can't fight his arrest, can't demand legal representation, can't call in his own team of specialists to get him out of this cell and to France. Because he owes it to his friends to clear their names even now, when it's 10 years too late. He owes it to each and every one of them because they deserved better, while he never deserved to survive. Ginevra's furious face flashes through Draco's mind. Merlin, is there ever a limit to guilt? Objectively, he knows that both the cleanup and Harry's infidelity had little to do with him. Harry would have grown attached to anyone in his situation. But in this moment, even as he tries to grasp at the knowledge, the feeling of guilt, the feeling he'd worked so hard to bury, is rising up in him in overwhelming waves. Draco knows this is why he's letting Ronald risk his life and reputation in search of someone who may or may not exist. Ronald may not want to believe that a series of letters alone are enough to turn the DMLE mad, but Draco has read enough history to know that a little pressure exerted in the right way can make even the most strong-willed organizations crumble. It was quite the psychological attack that George had orchestrated. When the auras responded to his tips, the ministry was rewarded in the court of public opinion. When the tips were ignored, the ministry was blasted by the press. All this considered, Draco isn't sure that George would have really needed an accomplice in the DMLE. The pressure from the press alone was more than enough to force their hand. As for the Daily Prophet, they never hesitate to publish anything defamatory. So long as you know the name of its current Rita Skeeter, you've got your in. Draco feels his insides twist. He's risking everything he has on what may very well be a wild goose chase. Normally, Draco wouldn't trust Weasley for a second, but he'd said, what had he said? That Harry trusts Draco, and that's enough to vouch for him. And likewise, Harry has spent his whole life trusting Ronald, and if that doesn't count for something, Draco doesn't know what does. The sound of arguing comes from outside the cell door, and Draco rises to his feet, watching it wearily. A beat passes, another. With a wild crack, the door slams open, and Potter storms into the room, followed closely by two auras. "Let's go, Draco," he says. "We're leaving." Draco stares at him for a moment. He's lovely, cheeks flushed and green eyes flashing with fury. This beautiful, brilliant man had almost been his, and now... Draco can feel the distance between them in a way that he never had before, even when he'd been 11 and hoping for friendship, because back then, he didn't know what it could be like. But now he knows. Now he knows exactly what it could be like, and knows that he can't have it. Frowning at the weakness of character embedded in the thought, Draco turns away from Harry. This kind of thinking isn't good for him. The two auras in the doorway exchange looks. "Mr. Potter," one of them says, "you can't just remove a prisoner from the premises. Minister Shacklebolt approved your visitation, not..." "I'm all right where I am," Draco interrupts. "Thank you, Mr. Potter." "You're mad," says Harry. "Being pissed at me is no reason to rot in a jail cell you don't belong in." "Potter, you'll be surprised to learn that not everything in my life revolves around you." Potter opens his mouth, then closes it. "Leave us," he tells the auras, gritting his teeth. They straighten. "Our apologies, Mr. Potter," one of them says, "but we can't leave you alone with a dangerous prisoner." "The only reason I'm not your boss," says the Potter, rounding on them, "is because I turn Kingsley down every time he offers me the job, which is weekly." He comes right up to them. "When he comes over." The auras take a step back from him. "To my house." They take another step. "For dinner." The cell door slams closed between them, leaving Potter alone in the room with Draco. "Draco, I'm so sorry," he whispers, coming closer to Draco. Draco stands there, unable to move, as the warm tips of Harry's fingers touch his cheek. Then he pulls back, stepping away. Hurt flashes across Harry's face, and Draco almost feels bad. "Ginny and I are over, I swear to you. No matter what happens between you and I'm not going back to her." And Draco wants to believe him. He really does. But he knows it's fruitless. Ginevra is Harry's family. All the Weasleys are. And Draco... well, Draco cannot compete with that, nor should he. "That night when you found me," Harry says, "I had just found out that..." It was Ron, the cleanup. He was the one sending in tips to the ministry. "He called me crazy for years when I was trying to find the person responsible. Called me paranoid and obsessed. I should have known. I should have guessed that he was trying to redirect my attention. I, idiot, thought we had just drifted apart. Gin knew about it, of course. All the Weasleys know. But Draco, you have to understand, they took me in when I had no one. If I turn them into Shacklebolt for this, what kind of person will that make me?" Draco turns away from him, unable to face him. "Harry..." "No," Harry says. "Listen, you're the best thing that's ever happened to me. I want..." Harry comes up behind Draco, wraps his arms around his waist, and presses his forehead between Draco's shoulder blades. "I want you so much, I can barely breathe." Heat hisses down Draco's spine, electric, and he's suddenly breathless. He needs to put a stop to this. He needs to, because if this goes on much longer, even his self-control will give out. But Draco has the truth on his side, and he's long since learned that it can be as much of a weapon as a lie. "It wasn't Ron," Draco says through gritted teeth. "What?" asks Harry. "The cleanup wasn't Ron." Draco says again, "It was George." Draco can feel Harry's arms stiffen around his waist, and still he charges on. "Ron kept it from you because he couldn't send someone in George's condition to Azkaban. Ginevra, too, was just trying to protect her mentally ill brother. Much like you are now trying to protect the family that took you in, she did what she had to do. You don't see it now, but you will, and when you do, you will return to her. And I won't be able to stand it." Potter pulls away, and Draco shivers at the cool air that sinks into the spaces Harry had been occupying only a moment ago. "That's bullshit," says Harry. "Who the hell told you that?" "Ronald." "Ron locked you up and told you that he's what? Covering for his brother? Harry asks with a rueful laugh. Yes, Draco says, nodding. Ron believes George had accomplices in the Ministry, that they're the ones responsible for the fire. That's why I'm still here. He thinks they'll be easier to find if they don't know he's looking. Draco, that's bullshit. George had nothing to do with it. Ron's lying to you. He's gathering evidence against you. Your family is the only one that escaped. The only one. No, says Draco. Ronald wants to set this right. He told me... Head Aura Davis, snaps Harry, wouldn't let us go after you, but now that Ron's Head Aura, there's nothing stopping him. Don't you see that? You're hurt, Draco says quietly. And you feel betrayed. It's easier to believe the worst, but... No, Draco, I know. I am telling you that I know. This isn't guesswork. I'm not making this up. It was Ron. There were no accomplices because he didn't need them. He's a war hero working in the DMLE. He's deeply trusted, and he knows the ins and outs of the entire system. He knew exactly where to push and how. Draco feels like reality is twisting in on itself. He doesn't know what he's supposed to believe. Who to trust. How to get out of this mess intact. It feels like everything is on the line. His heart, his business, his life. I just left Kingsley's office, Harry says. Both your parents have been summoned to testify on your behalf. They'll be in the country tomorrow, Draco, and then it's open season. Draco sits down on the cot with a thump. He doesn't know who to trust. Merlin. Is Weasley setting him up? Or Potter? Are they in on it together? Is this... What is this? What do his parents have to do with anything? Why are they coming here? Potter's right. The moment his mother and father set foot on British soil, they'll be in danger. And they will absolutely return to England if they believe that Draco needs them. He realizes abruptly that it's not about trusting Weasley or Potter, it's about trusting himself. He needs to trust himself, he needs to protect himself, his parents, his business, and relying on anyone at this point can prove fatal. It doesn't matter which one of them is right or where the truth lies. What matters is ensuring that nothing can be done to his family. Draco rises from his bed and goes to the cell door. He bangs on it, and the two auras from earlier open it with surprised expressions. I demand to see my lawyer, Draco informs them, Marius Dempsey, at once, as is my right under Amendment 2469.8 of the Magical Legal Code. If you do not contact him immediately, you will be in violation of Act 475. I will know whether or not you have contacted him, as it is in his contract to respond immediately to any summons made of him. The auras hesitate, lick their lips, glance at each other. Go, says Draco. They go, closing the cell door once more. Draco, Harry starts. Please don't, Draco says, raising his arm in Harry's direction. I need to think. A few minutes later, the door opens once more, and Draco's lawyer walks in, followed by three assistants. He's a handsome man in his late 50s, with a confident gait and a straight spine. His elegant robes clearly display the insane sums he charges for his services. I'm being framed for arson, Draco tells him, before the cell door even closes behind him. My parents are being called into the country to testify on my behalf, and I have no doubts that warrants are being requested as we speak for access to my accounts, records, business, and home. Do you believe this to be a personal, political, or professional attack? Asks Marius. Personal, Draco replies, definitely personal. Marius asks Draco to recount everything that has transpired. His team takes down the details, nodding and asking questions as Draco tells them everything in as much detail as he can remember. You should have called me after the first attack on the port, Marius says, once he learns that there had been a first attack the day Draco had found Potter fighting muggles in the pub across the street from the Leaky Cauldron. I didn't think it had anything to do with me, says Draco. Marius snorts. If something happens in a room of 1,000 people and 1 Death Eater, he says, you can rest assured that whatever happened has something to do with the Death Eater, even if he's not the one at fault. Draco knows. Feels helplessly stupid for not realizing it sooner, for feeling so safe he hadn't even considered that either attack could have anything to do with him. It makes complete sense now, obviously. The first was done to check the port's defenses, to plant the spellwork. The second was to actually cause damage. Draco couldn't have come up with a better plan himself. But he'd been too fucking distracted by Harry Bloody Potter to even think about connecting the very obvious dots, and now he's... Draco begins to hyperventilate. Harry's at his side in an instant, pushing Draco's head down between his knees, telling him to breathe, to count to 10, to concentrate on him, on his voice. Concentrating on him is what got him here in the first place. Draco's vision blurs. His breathing gets quicker. He can hear his heart thump, thump, thump against his ribcage in a violent staccato. Draco needs to get himself under control, or he'll pass out. And if he passes out, he won't be able to deal with this insanity of a situation. I'm going to go see if we can get you out on bail, Mr. Malfoy. Stay put. That startles a laugh right out of him, and Draco can feel himself relax. He does have this under control. He may not have his emotions in hand, but he most certainly has every practicality of this situation taken care of. He's been preparing for an attack based on his Death Eater status for a decade and has everything in place. Everything is going to be just fine. Quill and parchment, he croaks, reaching towards one of Marius's assistants. She jumps, surprised at being addressed, and hurries to pull a roll of parchment from her messenger bag. He nods in gratitude and waves Marius and his team from the room. Once the door closes, Harry makes himself comfortable on the cot beside Draco, waiting patiently for him to pen a letter to his parents, asking them to remain in France. Listen, I want to be with you, says Harry, when Draco finally signs his name. Draco leans back against the wall with a sigh. I cannot be with you, because I'm still married. Yes, Harry, because you're married. But also because you and your people took all my friends from me, and when you got the chance to set it right, you decided against it. You told me that you understand, Harry says. I do, Draco replies. I absolutely understand, but that doesn't mean that I can support it. Everyone I cared about outside of my immediate family is dead because of what the family you are a part of decided to do, decided to hide, whether it was George or Ronald, Ginevra, or all of the Weasleys at once. I am sitting here because of a story that is a decade old. I understand why you can't turn them in, but what this situation does is put us on opposing sides of a conflict. You can get a divorce, though I hardly believe that you'll do it. This, on the other hand, this you can't fix. Turning Ron in won't help, says Harry. He's too good at hiding his tracks. Whatever evidence there was is long since. Potter, did you see the legal team that just barged into this room? Marius is the head of the largest legal firm in Wizarding Britain. I have him and the force of his entire company behind me. I'm going to be fine. He and his people will get to the bottom of this, and the person that started the fire will be found. And if that person is Ronald, then he will undoubtedly go to Azkaban. And then I, dear Harry, will be responsible for sending your best friend to prison. If the case is presented properly, quite possibly for life. However you turn it, whatever you do, you and I are an impossibility, not just now while you are still married, but forever. Draco, he starts, then draws off. At a loss for what to say, Draco assumes. What can he say to that? What can he really say? Nothing. Don't make this harder than it is, says Draco, trying and failing to keep calm and cool. We both needed someone. It was convenient, but it wasn't real. It was real for me, Harry responds. And for me, says Draco, voice finally taking on the razor-sharp edge he'd been grasping for, it was nothing more than wishful thinking. Harry's face falls, his shoulders slump. He climbs from the cot, fidgets with the hem of Draco's jumper. Keep it, says Draco, and Harry nods, refusing to meet his eyes. It still is real for me, Harry whispers. Harry, I'm going to get a divorce, Harry informs him, matter-of-factly, and then I'm going to come back for you. Draco shrugs a helpless shoulder. There's a knock on the cell door, and Draco looks up. You're being released, says Marius, peering into the room. Draco nods, rises from the cot, and follows his lawyer out of the ministry. If Harry looks at him in any particular way, Draco doesn't notice, because noticing will force him to stop, to reconsider. By choosing to stay with Harry, by permitting the Weasleys to go unpunished, he's saying that what happened had been okay, but it wasn't. Innocent people do not deserve to be persecuted in order to appease someone's fears. And as much as he wants Harry, as much as he wants to turn around and tell him that Harry's marriage is the only thing standing between them, that he'll wait until Harry gets a divorce, he knows that that will be a lie. Because what this situation has done is open the door for him to put the people responsible for the cleanup behind bars, and he's going to do everything he can to make that happen.